Hey everybody, welcome to the In and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett.
I forgot to change my name to hashtag where is Silk Song 2024.
Isn't that the question on everyone's minds right now? Is where is Silk Song?
Eric said it was going to be last year, last summer.
Yeah.
And I mean, I honestly didn't have my hopes for it being announced today, because I figured if it was going to be in any of the showcases, it would have been Xboxes. But man, I was not let down. It was a great direct.
But it was, yeah. And that's going to be our primary scope of news discussion. We're going to spend some extra time on the video games. Of course, we'll check in with Kaiju Number 8 and Yatagarasu, because it left off on another cliffhanger. Just did a whole time skip. And then made his big entrance. So had a lot to talk about on that front. But if you head over to Anime News Network right now and you look at the news that we've got on the main website, there are 14 separate articles that came directly from the Nintendo Direct that aired this morning. Obviously, there was even more on the Direct itself, but since we focus primarily on Japanese IPs, we're going to be sticking to those. So James and I we conferred real briefly about the ones that we really want to touch on. We're going to rewatch some of those trailers to see if, you know, now that I've had most of the day, I was up at 6 a.m. or whatever it was when this was airing, to see which ones strike your fancy or most excited about. Let us know which ones you're looking forward to in the comments. Before we switch over to that, Teo, I see any discussion about Ultraman Rising. We have a review for that going up tomorrow, actually, from Gyros Taylor. I haven't watched it. Looks like a pretty cute, family-friendly film based on what Gyros said. There's a baby kaiju in it, and I'm sure you watched it, James.
I didn't,
actually. Oh, not yet? Okay.
No, we just finished, my wife and I just finished watching through the Venture Brothers.
Okay.
And so we were looking for a new show to watch, and she's really gotten into Delicious in Dungeon.
Oh, now's the time.
Pretty much any time we're sitting down to watch anything right now, we're going back through season one of Delicious in Dungeon, and she is a big fan. So
yeah, I just finished the manga. I got a review copy of the last volume, guys. So I, you know, won't spoil even.
Well, it is done.
It's 14 total volumes, so the series is over. The last
volume, how many volumes did they cover in season one?
Like 8.
Okay, so probably the next season.
Yeah, I would suspect that the next season wraps it up. So
cool.
And it's a pretty clean ending. Like, I wouldn't say there's like a cliffhanger or we could come back for a sequel if we wanted to, but it's a fully realized world, so you could go back and play in it, of course, but things get intense. And I mean, you start to feel that at the end of the second half of the current anime, but God, it's so hard not talking about any spoilers.
Well, I gotta say, rewatching the first part of season one, even, I'm just so impressed with. I was telling my wife, I think my favorite thing about it, I brought up that joke that someone made about how it's kind of like a much less hard to recommend Made in Abyss.
Yeah.
But I think it's really true that I think the thing the show does so well is the world feels very dangerous, even when they're just like goofing off and eating weird food.
Yeah.
And that makes everything feel so much more interesting, because, you know, it's not just, you know, it's technically a cooking show a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But everything they do has this like sense of stakes to it. And so I think the fact that that ramps up more and more is just one of the things that makes it such a hit.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of like, kind of incongruent parts right now start making more sense once they get into why the dungeon exists in the first place and how dungeons came to exist, involving like ancient technology that, whoops, maybe it kind of ripped a little hole in the seams of the universe there a little bit.
Yeah, that happens every time. Every time.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess I could mention the last episode of Delicious in Dungeon aired on Thursday too. So those of you, and they announced a second season. So we will for sure get that full adaptation. I hope Studio Trigger comes back for it. Don't tell anybody, but I was kind of hard on episode one when I watched it at Anime Expo. Back, I wasn't that impressed by it. I was just sort of like, okay, you know, I hadn't read the manga or anything at that point. First episode, I don't think really delivers like the charm of the show. I feel like that really doesn't sink in until, I don't know if it's a 3-episode rule thing. It might even be a little more than that, but I felt like it really didn't come into its own, even in the humor sense, until quite a few episodes later. I didn't think the first episode was very funny.
Later, I don't know, man. That hard cut when maybe a part of it's because I think for my wife, because she's on Tumblr, and so she's been absorbing a lot of it by osmosis.
Yeah,
and maybe it's because you kind of know where it's going if you've heard anything about it.
Yeah.
And I had like an idea, right? I had like a vague sort of idea of like some of the things the show is going to do. But there are some bits in that show. I always say that Trigger is one of those studios where their signature, I think, is less any particular stylistic flourish, although they have those.
Yeah.
And more just the sense that you can feel them having fun.
Yeah.
Like the fact that they're like having a great time doing what they do, or at the very least they're making you think that they are.
Yeah.
And that comes through in like every single thing they make.
Yeah.
But I agree that probably, I think, episode 3 or 4 is when you start to really get like, oh, like this is actually a serious but also really funny story and not just a bunch of weird food like one
episode. If you guys haven't read the manga, all of it is out from Yen Press except for the final volume that'll be out in August, and there's also a sort of compendium book that goes through like characters and like key moments, and it has little bits of their backstories that don't really get fleshed out in the manga, like that it expands on.
They're going to do a cookbook, right? They would be insane not to.
It'd be insane not to do a cookbook. I mean, they've already done themed cutlery, like professional knives and stuff like that in Japan. It would, fully make sense to like do a cookbook. But as far as I know, there isn't like a legitimate cookbook out yet. Yeah, I know. Like we have a D&D cookbook in our house that we regularly cook from.
I think I might have the same one.
There's
a recipe in there for like pear pork roast.
Yeah.
Pear cider.
I don't think we've done that one, but we regularly do what's called bangers and smash in that cookbook, which is, we do that one a lot. That one's pretty good.
It's like a great name for like a Chumbawamba style, like 90s British punk band, bangers and smash.
Yeah, it is. What's funny about you bringing that, sorry, that just reminded me that I made like some offhand reference in a family conversation in front of my son where I said, get knocked down, do we get back up again? And he's like, is that from that song, Mom? And it was like, yeah, it's Chumbawamba.
Chumbawamba.
Pass on the Chumbawamba. So anyway, I highly recommend the manga. It's very good. A lot of the funny faces you see in the anime do exist in the manga. So that's not like a pure triggerism. Like Roko Hui has a good sense of humor that is throughout. I also think Izutsumi is almost better in the manga because her cat-like mannerisms for some reason come across even more with her faces and stuff. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it has its own appeal, I think. Okay, let's dive into today's Nintendo Direct. Like I said, there were a lot of announcements. So James and I are just going to be going back and forth with which ones we're most excited about, want to talk about. I'll play the trailers because I've got a link list up here for all the articles on ANN for it. So James, why don't you start? What do you want to gush over?
Oh, man, I guess one of the not smaller necessarily, because I'm honestly kind of not surprised, but I'm really happy it exists, is this the Fantasian port.
That's the Square Enix one, right?
Yeah, so it was from Mistwalker, Hironobu Sakaguchi's studio. Given both his age and Nobu Uematsu's age, and the fact that I think he said he's retired from doing full soundtracks, this could very well be the last Sakaguchi, Uematsu, JRPG that we get. I wouldn't necessarily at least put all my eggs in like expecting another one. And it was an iOS exclusive, an Apple Arcade exclusive, and I don't have an iPhone. And yeah, so it was sort of a, it was a game that I was kind of resigned to never getting to play, even though it has a super cool like diorama style where they always talked about how back when they were making games for like the Super Nintendo, when they built towns and when they built these little tableaus, they always picture them as dioramas.
Okay.
And Fantasia, they make that like very literal where all of the levels are like these, they look like handcrafted kind of dioramas that the characters move around through. And it's so beautiful looking. And I've heard great things about the combat and just the overall just vibe of the game. And so the fact that we're going to get that on a portable platform that isn't tied to Apple's operating system and hardware is very good for people like me who refuse to get an iPhone.
Yeah, it's actually, it's even though it was shown during the Nintendo Direct, it's going to be also on PlayStation 5 for Xbox and PC via Steam come winter. Ooh. So however you want to play it, basically, is how you can. Let me load up the trailer here real quick. James, is this like a turn-based RPG?
I believe so. Again, I've never had the chance to play it. My understanding is that it's actually fairly challenging for a JRPG. I was reading their press announcement. They actually, one of the additions for this new version is a tuned-down difficulty mode.
I'll find some way to get my memories back on my own if I have to.
That's a guy? It looks like we have
the full voice acting.
My name is Destiny and Agent Vibran. You've got a lot of nerve. Very well.
Oh, I love Mistwalker.
I'll tell you exactly. Yeah.
Lost Odyssey is one of like the unsung classics of the 360 generation. And Blue Dragon's great. So I'm just glad that they got the chance to make like a, not like a gotcha game again.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a big full game.
What's going on?
I was gonna say, I like the character design too, like the costume design.
It's so strange.
It kind of has that not as chibi, but the lineage of Final Fantasy in the same way as like Bravely Default has.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Whatever it takes, there's still a chance.
Now, the airships.
Let us determine the fates of this world.
That Lady
together.
Vincent Valentine.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, would it be mean to just call him a Vincent clone? So the Neo Dimension, is that something they're like adding on to the title because it's the port then? It's not
that's
like...
my guess.
Okay.
I guess. I don't know if there's, it doesn't sound like there's new story content. Maybe there is. It seemed like most of the additions were like mechanical and you know, like 4K graphics and stuff.
Yeah, ANN's article says that it is a new role-playing game as opposed to connecting it as a port to the Apple Arcade one, but I don't know if I don't know if that's accurate or not. Square Enix described the story, assume the role of Leo as he journeys to recover his memories and solve the mystery of a strange mechanical infection destroying his world. Experience an original and modern take on the beloved turn-based battle system with a wealth of unique mechanics and strategic combat that shake up the classic RPG formula and explore a multi-dimensional universe come to life set against the backdrop of over 150 charming handcrafted dioramas. 150 is a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of dioramas, guys. Just setting up.
That's so many seasons of Community.
Also that, yes.
Hey, that show's going to be relevant again. That movie's coming out someday, so.
Oh, the Community. I completely forgot about that.
They're making it.
Yeah. So the only thing I didn't get from that trailer is like that was all cutscene, wasn't it? We didn't see any of the actual like gameplay yet. But yeah, I'm curious about it. I need to see more, I think, to really like jump on board with it. Okay, so one of my most anticipated, might as well just like rip the band-aid off of it, I guess, because what else am I going to talk about, is we're getting the Miles Edgeworth Ace Attorney games, both of them. The second one has never been released in English. Okay, there's like fan ports out there, I'm sure, but it's never been released in English. I played the first one, bought it on cartridge, or whatever, you know, dealt with the people who played it will know what I'm talking about. There's a very, very long, I think it's the end of the game, back and forth, where you're trying to prosecute this dude who definitely did a murder, but he did it in an embassy. And like the embassy is on the border of two neighboring countries, and he, you know, has immunity on one side of this embassy, but not on the other. And you spend a lot of time, spoilers, I guess, for people who haven't played the first one.
Is this the first Miles Edgeworth?
I just gave away like the last investigation. You're going to spend a lot of time trying to convict a very obviously guilty man of committing a murder by proving what side of the room he was on when he did it through a bunch of convoluted investigating. It took a lot out of me. But that said, I've heard the second Miles Edgeworth game, it has some of the best writing of the entire Ace Attorney series, period.
Thanks to several sales that Capcom has done recently, I think I own every game in that series, except for maybe, I don't know if I have Great Ace Attorney Chronicles, but I think I have all of like the remakes of the Game Boy Advance games and the sequel games. I have them on my 3DS and I have them on my Switch. I've never finished any of them. I really need to like give those games a shot sometime.
It can like, so the problem that I have with the Ace Attorney games, love them. I've played all of them to completion. And I would replay them, is that they can get a little long in the tooth sometimes. And if you make me read a lot while I'm in a comfy environment, I will fall asleep every time very quickly. So sometimes it takes me a very long time to get through an Ace Attorney game because I want to play it on portable in my bed. And I've tried other places. I've tried playing it on my couch. I've tried playing it in a chair. I will fall asleep. Maybe I'm just permanently sleep deprived or something. I can understand like they can be kind of hard to get through. And usually I start to get a little annoyed by the last, you know, portion of any of the Ace Attorney games because I've figured it out, but now they're making me show my work and I don't want to.
Was my issue in the first trials that I've played of like three of the games.
Yeah.
Was that I knew who did it. If they didn't like tell you already, or if it wasn't super obvious, I figured that out and I figured out how, but then when it came to like proving it, I was having a hard time kind of lining up with the game's logic of how it wanted me to connect the dots.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting really frustrated.
You're like, bro, this guy has bad vibes. The vibes are bad.
His name's John Murderton.
And
his hair is shaped like a gun. I honestly think that it might be one of those games where I'm just going to treat it like a visual novel and
you should
like play it with a walkthrough just like, you know,
because
the puzzles, anytime I'm confronted with like adventure gamey type of puzzles, it's very easy for me to get impatient and frustrated.
And see, like, I like the, my favorite part is usually, and this has a slightly different puzzle solving mechanic. I don't think you spend time actually in court for most of these. But I might be wrong. It's been a long time since I played the first one. But I enjoy like the investigative part more. So I like the part where you're looking around, like it's showing on screen here, where you're like looking at a crime scene. And then you pick up certain items and then you roll over them and like find what's weird about them or find a
different. I like that part.
But then it's like, this guy just made four statements, which one of, you know, and sometimes it's really obvious, you know, which one it doesn't fit with. But sometimes it's actually pretty obscure. And I don't mind that so much, but there's, I don't know. It's just like, sometimes it does feel like you're kind of reinforcing your point like three different ways before you get to move on.
And it's like in whenever you get to like the final chunk of a Danganronpa trial, where it's like we all know that you're the one who did the murder. you've basically explained how and why you did it twice. Can we get to the execution? Like, come on, let's go. And they're like, no, you have to explain why this guy's comment about the type of ketchup he used on his hamburger is proof that he lied about stabbing what's his name in the face.
And yeah, like, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, right. It can be kind of tenuous at times. You're like, I exited out of the trailer too quickly and an actor told me not so fast. And then there was a pre-order bonus information, but this is the part on the, I remember the airplane case a little bit. That's like the first case, I think, in the first game, is the airplane. Anyway.
The style of these games is on point.
Yes.
Character designs, all of that.
Yeah.
Incredibly charming.
Yes. Yeah. That's why they've lasted for so long. I should probably just do a replay pretty soon. But I keep telling myself I'm going to do that with Danganronpa as well. So we'll see.
That's a lot of game. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's a lot of game. I never technically finished 3.
Whoa. Oh, man. Okay.
But it's like, should I just go back and do 3? Or does 3 connect back to 1? And now I should just do 1?
3 is essentially standalone.
Mm-hmm.
There's references and, like, in-jokes that you'll appreciate if you have the other two games kind of fresh in your mind. But the end of 3 is the best part, I think.
Okay.
I think you could easily just play 3.
Just play 3 again. Okay.
That's what I'd recommend. Just because 3, I don't know. It's I think 3 is the best one. I know a lot of people like 2 the most, but I think
3
is my favorite.
Yeah.
And
I don't remember 2 well enough to. I mean, I played 1 a couple of times, so like all the characters in 1 are pretty fresh for me, but I don't actually remember 2 that well either. So I don't know. Maybe that'll be a summer thing. It's just replaying Danganronpa. All right. Well,
you should play Ultra Despair Girls, the third person shooter.
I've never played. That's spin-off. One I have never played. Is it good? Is it actually good?
It's fun. I was just complaining about Danganronpa. I love Danganronpa to the point where I like the anime, like the 2 anime, like mid-quel shows that a lot of people seem to really dislike or have big problems with. I love all of it. So I don't know if I would call Ultra Despair Girls super good in the gameplay department. Mm-hmm. But I was definitely willing to tolerate the gameplay because the writing was, I would say, on par with the other ones. So
does it feed into the entire world?
Especially if you're watching, because like the anime is what concludes the story of the first 2 games, and so if you're watching that and like taking all that in, then yeah, for sure.
Well, speaking of Danganronpa, should we talk about the new game that's coming from its creator,
Kodaka?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. I'll be honest, I don't remember what it's called. In my head, I've just been calling it, heavy air quotes, not Danganronpa, even though.
Its actual title is The 100 Line Last Defense Academy. And this is from 2Kyo Games, which is Kazutaka Kodaka's, home studio. And he's worked on this with Kotaro Uchikoshi, who did Zero Escape and iSomnium Files.
Did they do another collab? Because I thought that there was another game that they kind of partnered with.
I don't think it wasn't Rain Code. Okay, I was gonna say, I don't think they worked together on Rain Code. I think that was purely Kodaka. No.
That game my wife and I were just talking. We've had a hard time getting into that one.
Oh, really? It's good.
It gets better?
It gets good, yeah. It's got some crazy twists like you would expect from like a
Dungeon. Okay, because it's been our biggest problem is we're on the second case and it's like, all right, like this is fine, but it's not, it hasn't hooked us yet. I think I just don't like the 3D-ification of the, like when you're just kind of running endlessly through the hallways during the mind investigation.
I think I wrote the review for that game on ANN, and I think that was one of my criticisms as well, is that the labyrinths just weren't as well actualized as I feel like they could have been based on their concept. It's like you're in someone's mind palace space. Like we've seen this in the Persona games and stuff like that. Like you can really kind of mess with this, but it's just an endless hallway while you talk through your logic.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's just, yes. Yeah.
So, but yeah. I'm glad to hear you say that, because we've been meaning to pick it back up. So I think that'll be, but yeah. Point being, we got another not Danganronpa, but you know, let's be honest.
It still has, you know, the same visual feel that you expect from a Kodaka game, you know, the same art style. So when I watched this morning, I was like, is this a tower defense game? So that gives me pause a little bit, because I'm just not interested in that. But these are definitely Danganronpa character designs. Like,
whoa. I mean, they're like coming up here. There's a big, you know, apocalyptic disaster. They're going to be stuck in an academy. It's intentional, obviously. Like, I think they're very intentionally kind of riffing.
Yeah.
Which makes me think there's going to be some, you know, big twist. A
mysterious school. I mean, there's the ghost also reminds. Okay, you can see its brain, but that's.
She looks like the girl from Raincoat.
Yeah. Only white instead of like purplish. Mm-hmm.
I like that they have the paper cut out.
Their mission is to defend the school from hostile student enemies. But see, like this part, I'm like, I don't know. Just
did you play?
I'm not into tactics style gameplay. No, but I really need to.
So that game is a masterpiece,
right?
And I'm also not super into that style of gameplay, and it's not quite what this is doing.
Yeah,
but it's, you know, kind of similar in that it's mixing the visual novel with like a tower defense kind of tactics game.
Yeah,
and for any of you guys listening, if you haven't played 13 Sentinels, that game is like one of the most under-celebrated games of like the last few years. I think that game is.
It got nominated for the Game Awards, though, didn't it? I mean,
yeah.
How much stock you put in that?
Yeah, I mean, more just like within like the zeitgeist, right? Like, that game should have been like a bestseller, and I know why it wasn't. It was a Japanese visual novel, but that game's incredible. So
yeah, it's on my long to do list. The reason I'm showing these is like maybe this will get kind of ramped up. You know, when it's ready for release next year, it's just like right now there's a incongruency with the graphic quality that kind of gives me pause for the actual gameplay. And there were some issues with that in Raincoat.
In Raincoat, well. Oh, I know.
There was some really bad like loading issues of different assets and when they would load in on the screen. And I know that's like a continued complaint with the Switch in general for various games, but
I've been tempted to like start Raincoat over and just get the PlayStation 5 version that's coming out, because
it'll probably run better.
Yeah. Because honestly, there have been a couple times playing Raincoat where I've gotten like a little, like, I don't know if motion sick is the right word, but like the choppy frame rate.
Yeah.
And the low resolution. It's a gorgeous world, like the neon, but
like very Blade Runner kind of look. Yeah. And this,
like, very Akudama Drive.
Yes. It's on my list, everybody. If you guys have been reading the backlog, we've been having discussions in the ANN Discord about what should be the next one. I'm pretty sure I know what the next one's going to be because it's a shorter series, so I can wrap it up before heading to AX here in a couple weeks. But one of the ones on the short list is Akudama Drive. But yeah, so hopefully, again, this sort of, you know, still gets some more paint on it. I suppose it looks like there's probably some more character interaction type style stuff like we saw in the Danganronpa series. And I'm curious to see like where that aspect goes, because I'm just not 100% sold on the actual tactical defense portion of the game. That's the least interesting part to me. So
I hope it isn't too easy. A lot of times when you get like those visual novel / insert X kind of game type here, you can tell that they didn't spend as much time on the gameplay part, or that it's just not as balanced or not as polished. And it ends up like you just kind of wish you could skip it and get back to the story stuff.
Yeah.
13 Sentinels, one of the things that game did so well was that I think both halves of the game felt very solid, and I hope that they can do that with this one too.
Yeah. Okay, so what would be, what was, oh, should we talk about Zelda?
Hell yeah, we should talk about Zelda.
We should talk about Zelda. Girl's finally getting her own 100% game. Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, which Wisdom is a reference to Zelda's Triforce piece, for those who don't know, I guess. Mm-hmm. Link's out of the picture, so Zelda has to step up and get him back. There's some talk in the Discord that I was in that was a little disappointed that they didn't just let her like have a sword. So let me get this started and we can kind of talk how we feel about just the like choice, I guess, of her powers. Because I've seen this same sort of argument for like some of the Princess Peach games too, where it's like
where she's not like taking as active a combat role.
Yeah.
Or not as like aggressive, I guess, as like as Link would.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see later on in the trailer, like, she, like, throws boulders at monsters and, like, rides spinning disc things into them to destroy them. So,
yeah,
even though it's not a sword, like, she can still mess some monsters up pretty bad.
You can whack them with a box. You can do all kinds of... I think they'll
be creative. And then she steals their souls and uses them as her battle slaves, if anything.
Yes,
it's a little more hardcore than Link, if you think about it.
Yeah.
I love the Link's Awakening remake art style that they're going with here.
Yeah. Yeah, this art style hasn't been utilized nearly as much lately.
At first, when the trailer first popped, everyone thought they were maybe doing remakes of Oracle of Ages and Seasons, which would have been cool.
Yeah.
But this is even better, I think.
Yeah, this is totally better. So I don't know how much of the... Since this isn't the... Okay.
Oh no, he'll yeah, it'll go.
Yeah, through. I didn't know if this part was gonna be included because these are like the split up versions of the video. I'm like, well, that's not gonna tell you how any of the gameplay works, but yeah. Yeah, she can
They're taking kind of the same like creative improvisational style from Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, but they're kind of putting it into the 2D space.
Yeah, they're like streamlining it a bit, right? Like that's where I excel in these sorts of games, is like if you can keep it sandbox, but there's still some kind of structural border for me to play in, then I enjoy it. If you give me complete free reign, then I cry. I don't know. I have too many options. I'm like Kendrick Lamar. I have too many options.
I get that way a little bit with the Switch Zeldas too, where I love the freedom, but I also, I end up getting a little distracted where I'm like, I see people making like giant robots and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm making the snowboards looking little like half functional carts that can roll like 5 feet. And I'm like, I'm not an engineer. I was not made for this.
Apparently I just got some packages. Thank you, Felix. That came to the door. I need a little bit, and I'm also one of those people, like, if you give me collectible options, I need to collect all the things. So even the idea that like she can go around and learn how to copy a bunch of stuff, I'm gonna get hung up in the starter town because I gotta get everything I can copy. Get all the copies in the starter town before I move on to the next thing. So I have all the options. But yeah, see, I like this creativity of what can I use. It reminds me a little bit of Scribble Knots, kind of.
Yeah. Battles will look different. I am curious to see, because it does seem like this is, like you said, it's trying to streamline the sandbox nature. They talk about like all the different objects that there are, and I'm curious to see how much, like, look at that. She just vivisected a monster with some saw blades.
Create some evil fish, distract the birds with meat, and then cast a piranha plant that's not a piranha plant, you know, but Adam.
Like, so it looks like with the monsters, you'll have different, you know, like they'll have different attack types, different ranges.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering with like all the different stationary objects, how much different utility there will be. Like, is there a difference between sticking a tree in front of a you know, in front of one of those chaps versus a pot. Or, yeah. You know.
Yeah, they might functionally be the same, and then it's just more of a like, more of a choice, which I could see that easily happening, because when you've got this many objects, like asking the game developers to come up with that many like unique functional items, you kind of get into a situation where it's like, well, you don't just want to have a core set of functional items, because then your world just is reusing the same assets over and over and over again, right? So then it's boring to look at. But then you have so many items, it's too hard to come up with unique abilities for every single one, so you kind of get some repeats. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one.
I just want to say, Nintendo, you need to put Wanda Gamelon on the arcade.
What's Wanda Gamelon?
That's the other game where you get to play a Zelda.
I think someone shared a picture, like it was a CD-ROM game, wasn't it?
Yeah, the CDI. Yeah. Not the CDI. That was Sega. This was the what was that? Chat, help me out. What was the console that the Wanda Gamelon and the other two Zelda games
with it's the not, but it's not Sega.
It wasn't Sega, it was their original partner that they were gonna do the CD stuff with before was it the CDI? Okay. I thought it was
okay. People in the chat are just saying that they shouldn't port it. That's all I'm getting from chat.
The Philips CDI, thank you.
Philips. Okay, so it was Philips. Okay.
They should port it because it's hilarious.
I've never seen any footage of this supposed game.
You're in for a treat.
So this game is supposed to come out September 26th, which feels really soon. So yeah, like get hype. Yeah, that's like 2 months. 2 months and some change. So yeah. All right. James, are there any last ones to close us out?
Oh, I got at least one more. Did you have any more?
I don't think I have any more. Other than I could give like some cursory shout outs for chat, but I don't really have any more. So did you want the Metroid? Is that what we're
doing? Oh, we gotta talk about Metroid.
We gotta talk Metroid.
I am a convert. I've spent the last couple of years playing through the Metroid games. I'm not done yet, but I have Prime remastered on Switch. I have Dread. I've played all of the 2D entries from the Game Boy. But Metroid is just so good. It's one of those series where I wish that I had been more of a Nintendo kid, so that I'd had those experiences when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But even playing Metroid Prime now in 2024, that game still feels as revolutionary as it must have felt like 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think I actually Metroid Prime might be the only Metroid that I have played, which is kind of, so I might not have had the same reaction at the time that I played it that other people who like grew up playing the SNES and NES versions of Metroid, but yeah, I just remember like being blown away by turning, like you got the little like upgrades for your ball form and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then like there was a lot of puzzling actually where you would get something new and then you'd have to go back, roll all the way back somewhere. And now you could access this new area and stuff. I have vague memories of it because I was probably like 15 or something. But just remember thinking it looked really good at the time when it came out too, compared to a lot of games.
Well, and it's so funny because, this isn't like a mind blowing take, but when I finally got into Dark Souls and the FromSoft games, I realized, these are just Metroidvanias, but like way more hardcore.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Playing Prime, I got the same feeling I got when I played Dark Souls, not for the first time, but for the time where I got it, like where it clicked.
Yeah.
Where that sense of like exploration and kind of isolation, like you really are exploring this like alien world. It's just, I don't know. It's weird because it's a game that has obviously been so influential, because without Metroid, you don't have Dark Souls, I don't think. You don't have any of the Soulsborne clones.
Yeah.
But as far as like first person shooter style games, I don't really think there's been much of an attempt to try to replicate what Metroid did.
And yeah, I mean, I feel like other than within indie game circles, these sort of games have kind of phased out a bit. Like, we don't have like a Mega Man equivalent. This is the closest thing I can think of that had sort of like similar starting point, but definitely didn't move in the same direction as new consoles came out. So Wandering Dream says, so it's the Dark Souls of Metroid, aka Dark Souls. Yeah.
I mean, truly, I genuinely, like, playing Metroid Prime, I was like, oh my God, I get it. Like this.
Yeah.
Like the people that got this game, you know, back in 2004 or whenever it came out, were the people that were saying, guys, you need to play Dark Souls. And at the time, it didn't quite hit in the same way that Dark Souls did.
We're like, Metroid's old. Let's see, what's the big deal about Metroid? Why don't I just play Metal Slug or something instead? Same thing, right? I would try this out because I remember enjoying the original, and even though I have, or the original Metroid Prime, but haven't touched a Metroid game since. So
you should check out the remaster that's on Switch.
Okay. Yeah.
It runs really well. It has modern controls. So you don't have to do like you can do the old school controls, but you can just do the traditional, like, right stick to aim.
Oh, okay. And
it plays really, really well.
Yeah. I don't remember what the control scheme was like at the time. I was wondering if it was also inverted or something,
No, it was kind of like a little GoldenEye-ish where you had to like activate aiming mode. And then you couldn't move while you aim. So like, you have to stop so you can move your cursor. And then when you're not aiming, you can move. And it's a little clunky.
Okay. I guess before we get to anime real quick, I do want to point out the new Mario and Luigi game. Because I think those games have been great. Like the stuff like Bowser's Inside Story and whatnot. And we're finally getting a new one. I'm curious who developed it. Because the developer behind the previous entries kind of doesn't exist anymore.
I know. I was thinking about that.
So I don't know who's behind this one. Immediately saw it. I'm like, this looks really cute. It comes out November 7th. This is Mario and Luigi Brothership. I guess is another, which is kind of is there aliens in this? I didn't notice that the first time around. Is Brothership like a pun on Mothership?
I get it.
Aliens?
Okay. I thought that was a weird title. I didn't catch the aliens either.
Yeah.
Is this the first
time we're hearing? I might have came into this trailer late, I think.
Is this the first time we're hearing the new Mario voice actor? Because he sounds different.
It might be his first full-fledged game, although I'm pretty sure they've used him in other stuff already.
Okay.
Notice that magic in Mario is always like the little squares and stuff, like what Comic throws out of his wand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen zero aliens, so maybe I'm just wrong on that. I mean, I'm assuming that those are standard Mario monsters and not aliens.
Yeah. Cute. Very
cute. This looks really cute. Yeah, the gameplay looks cute.
I feel like the Mario games are... That's one of those franchises where one of these days I'm going to get it into my head to try to play all of them, which is going to be impossible because there's
that's thousand, impossible, but, James. What are you talking
about? But like, I'm all the main ones, the ones that I can play on the Switch or the
because these aren't considered mainline Mario games. It's considered like its own separate little side franchise or what have you. But
kind of like Paper Mario.
Yeah, like Paper Mario. What this is reminding me of, because I just recently played and finished Super Mario RPG. I want to say recently, but maybe that was like months ago. But
was that good?
It was good. It is really good. You should play it. There's kind of an easier mode now too, so you can get through it a little faster. There's some quality of life stuff that makes it move a little fast. But what I was thinking about while watching this is like there are monsters that you get in random encounters and stuff in Super Mario RPG. And because it was a Square title, like we've never seen those monsters again. And some of them are really weird. Like they feel way more like Square monsters than anything that would have been greenlit by Nintendo to put in the game. Like, I feel like the only reason those monsters got in there is because Square got to make it, and because it was Super Nintendo era and there was less like conformity to the like larger style of what a Mario character design. But just go look at some of them are creepy too. Like, there are some like genuinely kind of scary-ish ones in there that I don't think would make it into a Mario game now. But anyway, I'm excited for that one. That looks like something I will also play while cozy in bed on my Switch. So all in all, really good. We're also getting Donkey Kong. I'm sure people are ecstatic about Dragon Quest 1 and 2 getting a HD 2D remake. If you go watch the trailers for those, like, the graphics look gorgeous. And Dragon Quest 3 is also getting one that's coming out in November. And I guess that's a whole trilogy. But 3 is like a prequel to 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. So you play 3 and then you play 1 and then you play 2. So
I'm one of those heretics where I don't really love playing through the first three Dragon Quest games. So I'm super stoked for the more hardcore fans. But I'm much more into like Dragon Quest 5, Dragon Quest 7. So I don't know if I will be getting those games. But God, do they look pretty. So. Yeah. I will be admiring them for sure.
Yeah, yeah. They
and more kind of, HD 2D games in general. I love that.
Yeah, style. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of, Octopath Traveler kind of did that too, right? And those games also look just fantastic. All right, anime fans, you've sat through all of our game talk. Maybe found a new game that you're going to want to play here pretty soon. So let's go. Let's do Yatagarasu first. It's kind of a straightforward episode. For Yatagarasu, anyway. I mean, we kind of got more of the emotional way that Yukiya is dealing with as a sort of illegitimate son. So his mother is actually of higher birth than his dad's actual wife, if I'm understanding correctly.
Yes.
And
so, he basically they had to pretend that my understanding was they had to pretend that he's the son of the not as good mom or something. Basically they want his brother
they all have like the same first kanji, and then it's like Yukiya, and then Yukihiro, and then Yukimatsu, you know, sort of deal.
They want his brother to be the heir, so they've had to pretend that he's not as of noble stock as he truly is for his entire life.
It's basically like a mirror scenario for what's going on in the royal court with Natsuka and the prince, because the prince is the second born. But for special circumstances, he's put above his elder brother. And it's the same thing with Yukiya here. They think he'll end up getting backers because his mother is the daughter of the North Lord, basically. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, they'll try and lay claim. And so we see that his adoptive mother is a freaking saint, basically. Like, she loves him so much, despite the fact that he's not, you know, her child by blood, that because she's raised. Why did she raise him? Why was he not raised by his mother and with his grandfather? This I find kind of interesting. I'm not really sure why.
Just weird court politics.
And... Yeah. Yeah. But because they basically came and tried to take him. They're like, we're going to take him to court because we need to separate him from you. Otherwise it's going to screw up all, you know, your line of succession. And she wouldn't allow them to do it because it just made her son so sad that he was going to be without his, you know, the only woman he'd known as his mother. And what I found interesting, and tell me if you came to the same conclusion, Yukiya has been acting less adept on purpose this entire time, simply so he will be less likely to be perceived as a threat to his older brother. Like, I feel like he set himself up to be mocked on purpose, like doing sort of things and acting silly or sort of like the blockhead thing is a bit that he's doing so that he won't be taken seriously and thus is considered non-threatening and he'll be able to stay with his parents.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think that's definitely a very both interesting and good read on it. Because it's clear that his actual heritage is something that's really weighed on him. Mm-hmm. You know, it isn't like this is something he's finding out, right?
Yeah.
This is something that he was hoping no one else would find out about. And so it's clear that he is very conscious of, you know, what it means for him, the kind of, and something he brings up to Yukiya is that, like, this is like ruined my parents' lives.
Yeah.
Like this is the kind of like, you know, our whole family is so upset and stressed and horrified because of this stupid lineage hanging over my head. And you're just trying to exploit it like all these other nobles are trying to do.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He just wanted to be the country bumpkin from Nowheresville. And Yukiya kind of denied him that opportunity again.
Yeah.
So poor kid.
Yeah. Poor kid. And so once that sort of settles, that like disagreement he has with the prince, you know, there's a lot of like, I'm sorry, and this is what I was doing, and I'm just going to be honest with you, and please stay as my retainer. And then the series is like, hey, let's flash forward like 9 months, I think it goes.
Well, there's one bit I wanted to get at because I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
Mostly because like the whole moral of this episode, I mean, Yukiya says it at one point where it's like, yeah, this entire society is just built to drive people insane.
Yeah.
And to like corrupt them and kind of twist them. Because Atsufusa started just like Yukiya.
Yeah.
Where he was like an honest, decent guy that just wanted to help out the lord that he'd been assigned to. But because of all of the backstabbing and lying and scheming, you know, he got it. He thinks he got it in his own head to act on the brother's behalf because he just thinks he would be a better man to lead the court. But even Yukiya's like, that's probably just my mom messing with his head because that's everyone in this entire world. There's just pawns of other people that are scheming with other people and betraying other people. And it's not set out right, but Yukiya's biggest problem is that he thinks that he was just called here because his blood is like something that they can use to their advantage.
Yeah.
And the prince admits like, yeah, that was definitely a part of it. But I think by the end of the episode, it's pretty clear that the prince doesn't really have a lot of love for this society, for this world that he's been born into.
Yeah.
It killed his mom for one thing.
Yeah.
And so I think what really he values about Yukiya, and I think the reason Yukiya decides to stay is because he recognizes that same disdain for the system in Yukiya. Like Yukiya, he doesn't think he's not going to become Atsufusa where he's not going to get consumed by the game.
Right. Well, because he's angry that the game even exists. Right. And that feels like a very like, I feel like there's a moment in your life for a lot of us, not everyone, but for a lot of us, where you have to like reconcile your ideals with reality and like how those don't align. And so Yukiya is still set very strongly in his ideals. And so once he's confronted with the reality, he feels an intense anger because it's just an injustice that there's no remedy for outside of dismantling the system, which is a huge task that once you realize like, oh, well, the only way this gets fixed is if we like burn it down from the bottom. And that feels like an insurmountable or impossible task. So now I have to work within this unfair, unjust system of corrupt people out for their own good, profiting off other people's weaknesses, all those other sorts of things.
It helps when you could be friends with one of the guys that actually could affect meaningful change.
Yeah.
I have to wonder what part of Yukiya's thought is like, well, I like the prince. He seems like a decent guy. He doesn't seem like he's super corrupt. He's just kind of a jerk, but you know.
He is manipulative though. He is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's maybe more honest about the manipulation, at least when he's confronted with it.
Right. You know? Yeah. Cause I mean, I was between, just thinking, like, just,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh no. I was saying between getting out of Dodge and helping Yukiya or helping the prince, maybe Yukiya is thinking, well, maybe if I help the prince, he can actually help me burn it down from the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, fix something, you know, assuming he doesn't come to power and then just end up being like all the rest. Right. So, I mean, there's, mm-hmm. that's like a cynical take, but yeah, so you can see like Atsufusa goes totally nuts, and that's after that confrontation is when we get the changeover. And one thing I noticed, and you've got a screenshot here, the way this scene was animated at first was kind of different than usual, wasn't it?
Yes.
Did it look rotoscoped, maybe? Do you think it was rotoscoped?
Not rotoscoped. Maybe like the backgrounds. Well, they don't look digital.
Specifically the faces. Like, they're not bad. The faces look more like
detailed.
Yeah, they're not bad, but they're different. Like, there's even, like, it looks like more color in his eyes than I would expect. Mm-hmm. Like, can I zoom in?
More lines in the face too.
In the face, and just they just seem clearer, almost clearer looking. The lines maybe are crisper compared to like if this picture of Asebi and I have the cheat sheet.
She's the one with the complicated name.
Masuhono Suzuki. Yeah, she has like the complicated Japanese style name from the period. I just thought bro looked a little, I don't know, just something. There's just something. I don't know what it is. But we don't have a bunch of screenshots of this, but this was the three remaining lords interacting. Like, we have us, the lord that oversees Asebi's side, and then we have Lord of the North, who we recognize at this point because it's Yukiya's grandpa. And then this dude who is, I just said her name.
Is he the one that's also
Masuho's?
The prince's uncle.
Is he the prince's uncle? Hamayu's. The one with Hamayu was his uncle. And he's not here because their entire thing kind of fell apart. So he's absent from this drinking session. So they're getting drunk and kind of like, kind of low key insulting one another. I'm gonna win. No, I am. Yo, you're too drunk. Watch yourself. That kind of stuff. But as we can see here, he says, you know, the East's favorite trick is black-hearted scheme. So again, this is talking about Asebi. Mm-hmm. And I thought the Lord for Asebi's Lord here, the Lord of the East, I don't trust him at all. He is doing a similar routine that I suspect Asebi is doing, only, you know, which is very like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, his hand is in front of his mouth the whole time and just very sheepish on purpose. While I don't buy that he's that dumb or anything or at all. So it was, bad ploy. But yeah, then it's spring. They're watching some dance performance. Seasonal sort of entertainment, and the prince just kind of rolled up. It's just like it cut away and it cut back. He's on the stage. He's wearing a no mask, which I believe is typically worn by female characters. He's in very the modest kimono that is just black. You know, goes full.
His transformation was like Ghibli mode. Like, it felt like something out of Spirited Away.
And then he just jumps up there. We don't see his gold feathers still. We haven't actually seen the whole gold feather bit. Yukiya introduces him, and then the episode cuts. The episode just cuts. And it looks like the next episode is just all flirting. Because the preview for the next episode, like, there's some blushing going on. There's like close-ups of mouths talking to each other. That sort of thing. Yeah, I think there's some saucy stuff. I'm excited for the next episode. But of course,
Well, the prince is finally going to interact with the women for the first time in a season.
Yeah, he's like, JK, sorry about that. Here I am. Yep. Ready to pick a lady. So, you know.
I mean, he has to, right? His deadline's up.
Yes, his deadline is up. And he will lose, I think, his claim to the it was a promise he made. So,
yeah.
So he's got to pick someone. So I feel like, and this is getting second core, guys. So I don't know what's going to happen for the next 12 episodes. Is it all going to be this? Like, I don't know. So
I hope there's not a big, do we know if there's a gap or is it going to be airing in this upcoming season?
It's just Crunchyroll released their simulcast schedule today and it said continuing into next season. So it just keep going next. I mean, sometimes there's like a 1 week break or something like that, but it should just keep going. I will eat my hat if this doesn't get voted into episode reviews starting next season, because I think everyone kind of slept on it because of its late three episode premiere.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, this is right. She would mm-hmm. do so good on mm-hmm. the show. Oh my gosh. I would eat those reviews up. I'd be so excited to see her takes.
Yeah. Again, don't tell anyone. If it doesn't get voted in, I might just have her do it anyway because I need more people talking about it. So I want to be able to read.
Yeah. People need to hear about this show. This is legitimately one of the best shows of the year. Not a single bad episode all season. And I've been hooked like week after week. It's I think of everything we're watching, including Kaiju number 8, which is good. I think I'm excited to watch Yatagarasu every week.
I'll eat my red one. I have a red hat.
Ooh, licorice flavored?
It will be when I eat it. So that also reminds me, because we're going to have our most anticipated best of the season coming up. James, do you have your contenders pick, do you think?
The season's a little...
It's hard.
Yeah. One of them I kind of know just kind of by default. Mm-hmm. Should I say it or should I wait until
we should. You could wait. Well, I think I know what your worst will be, but maybe not.
Uh-oh. Wait, I was thinking most anticipated.
Oh,
I mean,
you can share your most anticipated if you want to.
I mean, Nier is coming back, and that's great. So, and hopefully it stays back.
Stays, I'm hoping
that the last, year has been enough time for them to.
Hopefully, I mean, the there were issues with Misfit Demon King Goes to School or whatever. And I mean, that was a really good show. People really liked it. It got held up with delays during the first part of its second season, and now the last three episodes are delayed for the second half too. So Wandering Dream says, we all know it's going to be a clean sweep for Tonari no Yokai-san / Bushio. He asked him, but there's also Yatagarasu, but there's also Bushio. Speaking of Bushio, I wanted to, let's do a quick palate cleanse because James sent extra Bushio this week, I think, because we've been missing Bushio.
He's been gone for 3 weeks, and now this most recent episode is just a straight dose of Bushio right to the veins, and it was great. Wow. Look at him there, being all cute.
Look at how cute he is. Oh no, did he poop on the rug? Maybe.
No, he's just getting dragged off to an adventure.
No, I don't want to go. Does he have a camcorder?
Yeah, his brother was kind of spying on some lab technicians, and he was like, "No, you can't do that. You got to ask permission."
It's not good. It's not good. Oh man, there's a lot of Bushio and his brother faces in this. This is great. This could be used as an emote. This is emote ready already. Bushio in a backpack, surprised.
Perfect.
Preferably, probably riding a bike. Godzilla cameo.
Yeah, good. I was very happy about that.
Yeah. Good. Oh no, Bushio cries again. He cries
a lot. His brother even says, "Like, man, you must have weak tear ducts."
Yeah.
So he's
poor little dude.
This one, he's crying at a museum because of a sad artifact that makes him cry. So.
He's just a very sensitive boy. And here's him with, I forget, is it Wagon?
Wagon-san, yeah.
Wagon-san. He's taking notes.
Taking notes for his new job.
Oh, he's got a job at the museum? Yeah. I thought maybe he had a book report.
No, he has a job working for the Demon King, who's like a he's like a like an actor. Like he goes on like variety shows, and he's like an entertainment industry guy.
Okay. He's gonna be like a celebrity. This isn't Puccio, but this is Wagon and
look at he's drinking a cup with his car face.
It's like in the grill, I think, is where his supposed mouth is. Delightful. That's Kaiju. Yeah. All right.
Then there's a Kaiju, not as cute.
Not as cute, but here's Kaiju. So Kaiju number 8. I actually watched this episode dubbed. First time I ever watched an episode dubbed. I actually thought it was pretty good dubbed.
It's a good dub.
It was a pretty good dub. Pretty good dub. Again, this was, you know, good battle scenes between Hoshina and our big red guy here. There was a lot of him killing him and then him not actually being dead and coming back. And that kind of happened a lot. I like the part where he bubbled, you know, just like bubbled. Hold on.
Did I get a shot of that?
Did you get a shot of the bubbles? Yes.
Yeah.
I liked this part where he turned into a giant, you know, nucleoid or something. Or this looks like the center of an atom.
Mm-hmm. Big but Attack on Titan vibes this week.
Yes.
With the fights.
And also the fact that Kafka had to reveal his true form to everybody. And now they know he's a Kaiju. Feel less like he's going to go the Eren route, though. With that.
I hope not.
I don't know. Kafka doesn't. I don't think he's
doesn't strike me as the type.
Doesn't strike me as the Eren type. I'll give him that. Yeah, but yeah, overall,
if Levi had been given the Titan powers, man, how different a show that would be.
How different a right? Yeah. Right? Why didn't they just do that?
It would have been too powerful, too strong.
Probably would have been too powerful. Would have become the ultimate short king, and just decimated.
A short king. I feel like all of these Attack on Titan comparisons are making me, I mean, even the shot, right? Like the shot very much evokes the classic season 1, season 4, you know, the Attack on Titan shot. It's kind of its own little thing.
Yeah.
Great episode. It kind of sounds like we're maybe not as excited about it. It's great. It's a lot of fun. It was just kind of an action scene, so there's not really a lot to dissect.
Yeah, it was the same last week as this week. You know, there's not a lot of like scheming and stuff in this show, which is fine. Like, it's just as far as like discussion wise goes, you know, we can talk about the great action choreography only so many times before it's just sort of like, again, this is another one. It looked really great. Monster design was really good. We got a little bit about Hoshina's backstory, and all I've got to say is, like, between him and Kikoru, who are letting these men have children, letting them raise
anime dads, man.
Anime dads. What's going on? What's going on? You're not cutting it, all right? Like, got a kid who's like a prodigy sword master, and you're like, yeah, but everyone uses guns. Think outside the box, bro. You don't think the Defense Force thinks outside the box when they're fighting these monsters?
He's wearing a magic kaiju suit of armor. Like, let him cut things. Who cares? Like, he's fine.
You don't think they can make a sword similar to they can make a gun to shoot these things? Yeah. It's just,
they're giving Kikaru an axe. She's fine.
So. Yeah. Yeah. They gave her an axe. The difference.
It's less practical than a sword.
It is. It's big and heavier and, you know, not as quick as what Hoshino's got going on. So
it was really cute, I will say, when and I keep forgetting homegirl's name because she hasn't done a whole lot yet.
Mina.
When Mina recognizes his talent and invites him to the squad, and it's like you see him open his eyes all big compared to how they usually are. It's one of those things where his backstory, his relationship with Mina, it's all very like simple. There's nothing super complex or mind blowing, but I think it's effective. Like when I saw that scene, I was like, I get why he has a huge, if not crush, then why he has so much loyalty to her.
Yeah.
Because she was the first person to really make him feel like he was capable.
Yeah. And didn't just immediately tell him, like, your idea is ludicrous. You need to give up and, you know, go work in the shoe factory or something. I don't know. Yeah. Like,
she's probably like, I hand wield an orbital cannon and I have a killer tiger for a pet. Why would anyone think any of these ideas are stupid?
Yeah.
My idea works. So,
yeah. Also, do we know what's going on with the tiger? Is it just Okay. Well, I mean, not that every cool element in your story needs to have some like deep reasoning behind it. It is still kind of weird to have a trained tiger in a what's basically a war zone. So, you know.
I'm assuming it's like genetically spliced with kaiju DNA. Or something.
Oh, definitely. It's not a standard tiger. That would be that would be silly. There's definitely something else going on with this tiger. But yeah, Kafka really got to show up and now he's under arrest. I'm sure he'll be fine. He'll be fine. It's
but finally he and Mina will have a conversation, hopefully, that's longer than like two sentences.
Yeah.
So and I really want those two to interact more. That's the one thing that the show hasn't really done enough of yet for me. You know, it keeps
they haven't like, interacted us. That much. She hasn't interacted that much with anybody really in the current timeline. Most I mean, like, we got stuff with Hoshina via flashback and she's had like some small conversations. I did want to, now that I remember what I brought up watching the dub, the voice actress who's playing basically the tech girl who's like back behind the desk yelling at everyone to not die.
The girl who got a little wall-eyed in that one screenshot I got.
Yes. Yeah. And she's got the glasses. Great job, actually. I thought she was one of the best sounding performances in this episode for, you know, it's not like a lead action role. She's like the Ritsuko of the group or something. Mm-hmm. Right. Or maybe. Yeah. But I just think they're doing a stand-up job and I just really liked their take on the character. So just wanted to like throw that out there. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up then for Kaiju number 8, our Nintendo Direct rundown. Again, you can get, there's 14 different articles up there, as well as I think we've got the Crunchyroll streaming schedule up over on Anime News Network right now. So if you head on over there, you can get up to date on that, watch all the trailers, find out what you want to play, and we'll be back again. No. We will not be here next week on Tuesday because on Friday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, is the trailer watch party with Jeff Thew. So from Mother's Basement, we're going to be watching all dem trailers. I made the playlist of trailers today. Might get some updates, but I think we're hovering in the 50s.
God.
We've been in the 60s before.
That's true. So I was hoping we'd be in the 40s. There was... Was it this season or last? There was one where we were like at 44 and that was great.
I feel like it's been a year since we've been in the 40s. I feel like it's consistently been beyond the 40s for the last year or so. It's
We always have a fun time.
We do. We always have a fun time. Bring your snacks. Bring your floaty. Bring, you know, your sunscreen. All that.
Bring a Mai Tai.
Bring a Mai Tai if you are over the age of 21 or otherwise it's legal to drink in your area. Bring a Mai Tai. I will bring or a strawberry lemonade. If you want to get real fancy, get a strawberry lemonade, put some like tonic water in there so it's bubbly. So it's like sparkling strawberry lemonade. Until then, we will see you guys on next Friday. And then I have to fly out for anime. All right.
Con season never ends.
Woo! Woo! Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.